Okay, thanks. I will speak actually only about half of this because I experienced here the previous speakers, and my experience tells me now that I should be very careful. So I will not speak about stability, and maybe we can find some other time. I will just mention this here. This is aiming at putting long-range Kummer effects into the TJ model, but deal with it on a very accurate numerical basis. So this is, if you like, a density functional DMRG calculation, studying what happens with the stripes, filling, periodicity, and pair field correlations once I put in long-range Kummer interaction. But I'm sure I run into many questions, so I would like to concentrate also, because the photo emission experimentalists are here, on the single particle excitations. And here also we use a new numerical technique, which is in principle very, very simple, but we believe very accurate. In fact, we believe, and I hope I can convince you, that this is the first calculation of single particle excitations in stripes, which is numerically really accurate. So I will concentrate on this. And these are co-workers, in particular Mark, who was very much involved in this in Würzburg. So let me give you a brief introduction. I'm sure you know all this. So clearly I do not have to give you an introduction into high TC materials. Instead, I would like to say a few remarks as an outsider, as a theoretician, about experiments verifying certain aspects of stripes. And then I would like to come really to the theoretical stripe description, and in particular, use the opportunity to make a very careful, if time allows, comparison with the data of the Shen Stanford group, and then I would come to my conclusions here. Okay, the motivation is, I think, pretty clear from all kinds of work, and just as a fun fugue or so, I list all these Nature and Science papers, which give you an impression that recently people have really been interested, both in theory and experiment. And in particular, I would like to emphasize that they are really beautiful experimental technique with lots of new resolution, which discuss certain issues here, and I'm sure, again, that you are familiar. So let me come to a typical stripe situation in high TC connection. First of all, there was experiments by, in particular, Trancada's group verifying that we have static stripes in the lanthanum neodymium copper oxide, which, however, is a non-superconducting material. In connection with superconductivity, then the material interesting is lanthanum neodymium doped with strontium. And here you see the usual temperature versus doping phase diagram, which we know already from lanthanum strontium copper oxide. And if you, in addition, put in neodymium, you have a lowering of TC. And in particular, TC is suppressed around 12% of doping. So at first glance, this looks really as if the stripes are not beneficial for superconductivity, just the contrary, at least the static stripes. And in general, however, it is very clear that if we want to understand why this happens, then we really have to have a microscopic theory of the electronic excitations of these stripes, and this was our aim.
I have one question about
sure. Don't ask me these things
have been observed with neutrons.
Well, I will come to this.
But what they have observed is these four incomplete.
I will come to this. I mean, and please.
Wait a second. More than that, the charge.
Yes. I will come to this. So this is my next fugue.
No, it's not the charge.
No, no,
it's P.
That's the lattice.
That's you
the
charge.
Yes.
Charge.
Yes.
And you see such a peak in
chromium,
you know, yes. Except for multiple types. You see,
yes.
If you always see a super lattice peak of an anti-ferromagnetic order.
Yes, the Trancada has intensity analysis that
Trancada tells me just a week ago that was not really, there was no real proof that those were stripes. The question is what the structure is.
Okay, can I make a suggestion?
For that, you have to have many Bragg vectors, you have to find them. Single Bragg vector, you cannot make any statement.
No, actually, the nickelate he did, and the nickelate he did, but not in the neodymium cuprate.
I'm trying to defend, it's right.
I'm not trying to defend anything, I'm just trying to make sure that we don't understand.
But I think that there is another thing, there is the temperature dependence on the peaks that shows that the charge peaks come first and then the spin peaks follow. So that's very different from chromium.
Okay, so I can already see that it was very dangerous to put on these fugues, but nevertheless, I was actually feeling that this is a very important topic which should be discussed more, and so this is a good opportunity.
You can also interpret this as there's a lot of interest.
Yes, exactly, which I showed already in terms of Nature and Science articles. So absolutely correct, you know all this. We have this in X and Y direction incommensurate peaks in the momentum space as seen here, and as for example measured by Tanquada for this compound, and also of course by Mook and other groups. And this of course basically tells you that if I want to interpret it in this quasi one-dimensional picture, I have a modulation on top of this Bragg Q pi pi vector, which signifies the antiferromagnet, with an incommensurate wavelength lambda, or wave factor 2 pi divided by lambda. And this in particular means that if I want to draw a quasi one-dimensional, I have an anti-phase shift from this region to this region, plus and minus sign in the local magnetic moments. And then from this delta, you would get that the lambda equals 8, which I have indicated here. And the heat of the discussion was already in my second fugue along these lines. Namely, there is indirect evidence again for elastic, from elastic Newton scattering for charge modulation, and the corresponding indirect evidence is that you have twice this displacement. And so we know, if again we believe this quasi one-dimensional arrangement, that the charge has to follow this pattern here, and we have a certain hole count, which I'll discuss in a minute, in these quasi metallic one-dimensional rivers, and the wavelength is 4 and not 8 like in the spin pattern. Okay.
Can we stop here for just a moment, because I want to go back to more of this point. Is your point was that this could have just the magnetic structure that you see could drive the nuclei to slightly displace, and then you scatter off that. And that somehow the difference here, though, is was that if the charge position were to come on first, somehow before you saw the magnetic motion, would that be more convincing, or is that still not?
Well, I mean, it's a question of how you interpret it. I mean, what they're seeing, of course, is some lattice, if you want, the lattice modulation.
Yes.
If you interpret that as a localization of the charge and strike, then the first thing I would say, I would expect to see a large anomaly in the transport. I mean, we just did it. Like in every charge density system that I've ever looked at, we see a large anomaly. In the resistivity of these samples, there is no anomaly seen at the temperature where Tanquada reports the strike formation. So you have to be aware that there is no anomaly in the resistivity. But though these holes are supposedly localizing into the transition.
Is there an anomaly in the hole?
The anomaly in the hole, but that's just basically at a higher temperature. There's a higher temperature, which is the LTO to LTT phase.
Right.
And there is a small anomaly in the resistivity at LTO to LTT, and there's an anomaly except in the Hall effect at LTO.
But Morris, I really want to sort of use also the opportunity here to convince you that at least for static stripes, for which we can do the calculation, we view our results, which I hope I can discuss in detail here, compared to CXN's data, photo emission data, as really some additional evidence that this thing happens here. So this is my aim. So I'm not really aiming at verifying, which I can, these type of experiments.
And okay. There is another thing. I mean, of course, for a charge density wave system, I agree with you, but it's not clear that you have a charge density wave state here.
No, you have a charge modulation, as you just pointed out yesterday. There is a charge modulation, but it's not clear that it's a charge against the wave state.
However, charge modulation, we were talking about yesterday, was a situation where there is a perturbation of the lattice, which is not spontaneously formed, but in the lattice itself, we have one, you know, one chain with full of oxygen, the other was totally empty. Now that is a, that must induce a modulation. That is a structural quantity. Here we're talking about a spontaneous distortion of the lattice occurring as a symmetry change. That is what's generally called a charge density.
But here you also have an LTT phase, right? You have a transition from LTO to LTT.
That's at a higher temperature.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me make really the following suggestion was I cannot and I will not address these experimental issues. I wanted only sort of motivate slightly what I'm discussing, because actually we want to provide from a totally different point of view some evidence, at least in the static stripe configuration, let's say where I dope LSCO with neodymium, and then I compare with the photoemission data, and there we get really features which in our opinion uniquely determine that there is actually a stripe configuration present. So let me work on this.
Can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
Actually, it's very educational to me. I'm not aware of the case of the chromium. Is the chromium the form factors also worked out like in this case, or?
Well, you see, you can see a 2Q modulation there. Which is a singlet or charge modulation.
Right, sure.
In front of them, you can
see also the charge modulation can appear at least twice.
But the fluctuations there are commensurate, right?
Okay, so let me summarize then the next point, which however, as I will indicate, is also not clear evidence. Sometimes as evidence for stripes has been used that the incommensurability measured, say, by delta, or sometimes used in experiment by epsilon, is linearly related to the doping strontium concentration up to this critical filling of 1.8, as you see in this plot. And basically this means that up to this critical concentration, the incommensurability increases linearly with the doping, or the wavelength lambda decreases with the doping. And this is in accordance with the picture that the stripes just move closer together while doping of the stripe stays constant. And for this, again, there is experimental evidence. But again, a warning I would like to make, because this relation I could show you if I wanted to, we get precisely from the one-band Hubbard model by doing quantum Monte Carlo simulations and away from half filling. And we know that at least in these quantum Monte Carlo simulations at higher temperature or also at T equals zero, we do at present not find stripes. So this is again, in my opinion, not clear evidence, but it is an interesting and appealing physical connection. And also there seems to be an empirical connection in the sense that this linear relation deviates at 1/8, where we have precisely the dip in the superconducting transition temperature in the neodymium doped LSCO.
I'm very interested to hear you say that, because I find this plot of epsilon versus 6 the strongest evidence that convinced me that what we should call this thing strike, because it's very hard to imagine this spin density wave with this thing except for some strange accident.
I only wanted to point out that when we do the numerics for both the one band and three band Hubbard model, we have also found such a linear relation.
An accident?
That I don't know, because as you said, it's very hard to imagine from a spin density wave or some analytical, for example, weak coupling nesting picture. Yeah.
Can I go back to the stripes for just a minute? I thought too that although it's a different material than what Herb Mokas told us, when you had the untwin system, we saw just two spots rather than four. That would make one want to talk about stripes rather than
in density wave work.
Is that just wrong
to think
that way?
This is an unplumped YBCO cycle, and you're talking about now a feature of 25 meters?
No, I think what he showed was incomplete.
Yes, the empty measure one, 25.
25 millivolts? That's not a static strike.
It's not a static strike.
But whatever it is, could be something else. Well, that just means that the excitation curve is a minimum by somewhere in the zone.
But it seems strange to me that it would be associated with one direction of the keystones.
Well, why do you see all this change?
Interference of the chains and
right. In fact, I will come to YBCO in a minute. So the last picture I would like to show for motivation of the stripe interpretation is, of course, data acquired in Shen's group on this neodymium doped LSCO. Where, and he has discussed this just very recently, we have a quasi one-dimensional rod situation in the momentum N of K distribution corresponding this horizontal one to this vertical arrangement and the vertical one to this horizontal arrangement of these type of Fermi surfaces. And there again the issue comes up, why do I have such a symmetrized XY situation, but CX has offered some explanations for that. Okay, how about dynamic stripes and what could that mean? Well, in principle, you have an experimental technique to study dynamical stripe situation via no longer elastic but inelastic Newton scattering. And of course, you know that Mook and company have interpreted their scattering data in terms of such an stripe dynamic picture. And in inelastic Newton scattering, you have, for example, four peaks, again very similar incommensurate peaks, and they are illustrated here. And of course, again the question came up, why do I have these symmetrized four peaks? And then there was an experiment.
I thought Mook has changed his mind on this.
I come back in the next few days.
Last week we were saying that we agree with Timer that this thing is just connected to the resonance.
Yeah. Right, could be.
He agreed on the data. Right. Not clear. He agreed on the
information. I think the connection occurred at 41 or 42 MeV, and if he drops down to 25, I think he sees the picture he drew.
Yeah, but then what is the meaning of assigning some wave factor to this thing when it's smoothly moving? Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let me come to
clarify this point for me, because what I understood from his talk is that as he detwins the crystal, he sees more and more asymmetry.
Yeah, let me
he
just
to interpret that.
Okay, let me just come to this picture because I'm just doing exactly that. So what Mook, at least in this Nature article, did with his coworkers, he detwined the sample, basing, let's say, more emphasis on the B direction where the stripes are oriented by putting pressure on, and then you see you get a certain asymmetry in the peaks, and this he tried to connect with the stripe picture. But there's another very interesting article which I can highly recommend by these people, and Keimer is also on this paper, and there they discuss that this may just be the dispersion from pi pi to these incommensurate peaks which is seen here in general. And in particular this experiment is very critical because once you put on pressure you are also influencing the background, and the background has lots of phonons involved. I actually asked Mook this question and he says he's sure that the phonons are not involved, but I'm not so sure because I haven't seen any calculations of phonons and how these phonons are influenced in this material due to pressure. So this to me is an unclear question also. Okay, so this summarizes my experimental talk.
I think I should add that the Yasuo angle also had 2.4. I don't know the doping level untwined crystals, and also sees two spots, asymmetry. Can our friends from Japan elaborate on that? I've seen him in
probably untwined the LTO or what? Very low doping. Very, very low doping.
Very low doping. I don't know about the level of doping.
The rotation, maybe the diagonal structure.
I don't know the
Yeah, I just wanted to get that.
Okay, so the sort of summary of, at least from our point of view, is that we would like to discuss the photo emission data, because the photo emission data, as much as they also may have certain inaccuracy and problems, and matrix element effects, for example, they give signals which, at least in our opinion, undoubtedly for certain materials, seem to make the stripe picture very clear. And let me discuss one experiment, which is Ino and other co-workers in Japan, mainly Tokyo, together with Xiaq Shen's group. And so basically what they did is they look at this LASCO system, standard one-plane superconducting system, and go from the anti-ferromagnetic regime, this is actually the second derivative spectrum of the photo emission data, so this is kind of a peak intensity for single particle excitations, energy versus momenta, and then you see the typical structure you have in the anti-ferromagnet, and let me just make a picture, I hope everybody can see this. So you would have the usual picture if you plot E versus momentum K, that I have, say, the gamma point, and I would start out with this, then you get this famous plateau, which would be at pi zero, and then you lose intensity also in the experiment and in theoretical calculations, and you go here, so this peak would be pi pi, and this peak would be pi over 2, pi over 2, and again this here. And so basically you get a lot of intensity here, which is this region in the insulator, and here, which is this pi over 2, pi over 2 point. And now you see when you dope, something very strange happens. And this is like a two-component system here. What happens when you dope, in particular in this regime of about 5% doping, you have still the anti-ferromagnetic background at pi zero, which is this flat region here, but it gets somewhat weaker. But you have an additional feature which comes close to the Fermi level and which acquires at pi zero all the weight, basically. And this is higher in energy than this what I have at pi over 2 or pi over 2, so I have something filled in here. And this feature you cannot explain by any TJ plus T prime, whatever two-dimensional model. You can play with all kinds of T primes and whatever parameters. You are not able to describe this picture by a 2D TJ or Hubbard model with nearest neighbor hoppings. And we believe, and I hope I can convince you, that if we do stripe calculations for a static situation, we get clear evidence that this is tied up with a stripe situation. Okay? And then eventually when you go further in doping, this becomes stronger and stronger. It's like doping into a semiconductor gap and you fill in some impurity states and they acquire all the spectral weight. And you also see that this here becomes relatively weak in weight compared to BISCO and other high TC situations here, the pi over 2, pi over 2 peak.
But you can't explain that within a T prime, T double prime J, I question a little bit, because in a paper with Robert Ader some many years ago, mm-hmm. we showed exactly this kind of effect, that the energy at pi zero mm-hmm. in the T prime, T double prime J model, which you need, you know, you want that energy to be lower, further away from the Fermi energy than at pi over 2, pi over 2, and then when you dope the system, in fact, things turn around.
Yeah. No, but not
Fermi energy is at zero.
Not to such an amount.
Yes.
I mean, we have done this. Robert Ader, I mean, I work with him. He's in my group. And if I choose this, if I choose this to be minus 0.2 times T, you are not reproducing these data.
Well, it's
I can show you this. So we can discuss it later. We have done this. I mean, there's just no way. Okay, what I really wanted also to tell you, and as I said, I have to unfortunately, because of all these discussions which I expected, shift this to another talk, namely, I would like to discuss why do they form, if at all they form, what would be the juice for forming them, and possibly some relation to ITC, at least we calculate pair sensibilities. This is the work including long-range Kuller effects, so I'm not going to discuss this. Let me give you a flavor what one could do to discuss all kinds of microscopic electronic properties, and people of course have done this. We have in fact tried to do this with quantum Monte Carlo and have lots of problems because of the famous minus sign problem. There is some work on the A of K and omega. This was the first work by Mike Carver's group, but the system size for the exact ionization of the TJ is smaller than the unit cell in the start phase, and this causes clearly problems. There's of course early work on the stripe stability and in mean field, and Didier Polblanc and Maurice Weiss were involved in this, and Jan Zahnen and others, and this correctly predicted that there are stable stripe phases, but the filling is not in agreement with experiment. Namely, the filling in experiment, as I showed you before, is you have one hole per two unit cells of the stripe, and the hole count was doubled, so it's an insulating situation in mean field Hartree Fock compared to the metallic situation in experiment. There are lots of other very interesting analytical approaches I can't discuss. However, all based to mean field, one very interesting discussion was by Dang Hai Li, and I would like to come back to this in connection with the Kuno long-range work if I have some other possibility. Then there's of course this important work by Wright and Scalopino, and I really think this is important because to me at least it showed first time that one can get the stability of stripes with certain boundary conditions in an in principle exact numerical treatment, and in particular in a short range TJ model not involving long range Kuller. Now we believe, in fact I can show you that long range Kuller will change some of the statements, but nevertheless this I consider very important because it also clearly showed that if you treat the correlation effect correctly, then you get the correct hole count in agreement with the experiment. So this is a work, again, I would like to discuss in connection with the other topic. Now, other works have been along the dynamical mean field theory. So Gabi Kotler might be very interested in this, and I'm sure he knows. This is a group in Stuttgart, Fleck and co-workers, and they have done the dynamical mean field theory. Again, for the spectral function, we do not believe, and I could go into the details, that this is very accurate because of the assumption that the K dependence is neglected in the self-energy, but we know from also our calculation that the K dependence of the self-energy for these rapid inhomogeneous structures is very important, or rather important. So this is what a very short summary of some work. Now, I come to what we have been doing. And we have been motivated by a Canadian group who had a nice idea for going from an exact ionization situation of, say, TJ or Hubbard model, in principle, to the thermodynamic limit. This is summarized in a recent PIL by the French-Canadian group here. And they called the cluster perturbation theory for homogeneous systems, and they always used the comparison with our quantum Monte Carlo data, and at first we weren't terribly interested, but then we got very excited because they just got very accurate reproduction of the in principle exact numerical data. And I will elaborate shortly on this new numerical technique, which in the way they used it is actually, they didn't realize this or write it down, is actually an old technique, and I would like to call it the CPA, the old-fashioned coherent potential approximation applied to clusters, and this has been used in semiconductor physics by people like Ehrenreich many, many years ago in tie binding models. But this is basically the idea. So what is the idea? The idea is I would like to make use of the fact that the physics in Hubbard and TJ models concerning the correlation effect is very local. We have local binding of holes into pairs, and there is a very local strong contribution of the correlation effect. And this we would like to treat exactly within a cluster by exact standard diagonalization. And then, however, we have all the long-range effects because of the hopping in these models, and the long-range effects, the inter-cluster hopping, is therefore treated perturbatively. They basically in their work state that this is the lowest order approximation of a systematic expansion in T over U. Well, we do not believe this because I could draw as many diagrams as in RPA, which also have the same order. Let's say T squared, for example, I get from two particle correlation functions, I would get T squared contributions which are not included here or differently included. So basically what they do is the following. I view this as a very nice interpolation scheme between local physics in a cluster and the hopping proliferating physics of the large thermodynamic limit. The Green's function in this approach is obtained from the cluster Green's function, which is actually a matrix depending on the site indices of this local cluster. So this is the number of site indices in the cluster. And then you divide it by an RPA type of expression, which as I said comes also in the CPA. This is basically the inter-cluster hopping. So this is our old-fashioned T hopping matrix element. And this is again the cluster Green's function. Now how can I verify that this has some physics meaning and is accurate? Well, first of all, it's accurate in two limits, which are interesting. You can just cut off the hopping, and this means this term is zero, and then trivially you get back in the atomic limit the exact result. But this is a trivial limit.
So how many holes do you have in your cluster?
Well, I come to this in detail. Okay, so one limit where this is exact is in the limit of no hopping, the atomic limit. You can also show, simply because then you can apply Wick's theorem, which you cannot apply in the strong coupling perturbation theory otherwise, and this is the exact resummation of the Green's function, and this term epsilon p is just t and is the exact self-energy. So you can show that this is exact in the limit of no interaction.
So these clusters are now with
open boundary conditions. Now this is very important. They have open boundary conditions. One can also formulate it, but then you have additional terms to take into account in a way where you have periodic boundary conditions. But the
open boundary conditions, you know, things like the holes or the panels on the walls and other stuff.
Yeah, but we have found we can also use periodic boundary conditions, and if you correctly take these corresponding changes into account, which amounts to changing the epsilon p, the final result is very similar, because actually I will show you the holes proliferate from the stripe region into the antiferromagnetic regime. And this proliferation is very similar, so we get more or less the same results for open boundary conditions. Can be done, but originally it was formulated with open boundary conditions. Okay, so it's exact in the limit of no interaction, and this could be viewed as an interpolation between these two limits. It's also interesting, and we have recently worked, this has appeared in FISFB, on the following other connection. It can be shown that if you trivially choose the cluster size to be just one site, then it is equivalent to Hubbard 1 approximation. And Hubbard 1 approximation, we have shown also in this work, to be very accurately in agreement with quantum Monte Carlo exact numerical data for the Hubbard model, for example, at high temperatures. So this is the Hubbard 1, and the shaded region are the spectral weight peaks plotted for the numerical quantum Monte Carlo simulation. But then you would say, okay, I know that Hubbard 1, if you know this approximation, doesn't include any spin fluctuation effects, so why should this be interesting? Now, here what we did, we just extended the Hubbard 1 approximation to an AB sublattice. So we allowed for a larger, if you like, unit cell and having an AB structure. And then you can in fact show that it reproduces very nicely the quantum Monte Carlo data also in the anti-Fermat regime, where in addition you get a lower Hubbard band, you get the coherent quasar particle band, so you get basically four bands, two here and two here.
I thought Hubbard 1 did not
Yeah, that I, as I just said, in this work what we did is we extended the original Hubbard 1 to allow for an AB sublattice structure. And then you can show that you get a coherent motion and an incoherent part. So if you're interested, we can discuss it later. Yeah, you get coherent. Yeah, I can show you that. The original Hubbard 1 doesn't do this, so we just get the incoherent part. But let's not go into the details. We can discuss it more as in detail along this calculation. Basically, I just wanted to point out that if you allow for a cluster which contains A and B sublattice structures, and this is of course the idea of the CPT, you go to larger cluster sizes, you can correctly incorporate the short-range interaction effects and the spin back and string effects. And this is numerically demonstrated here. So this is just a demonstration. What is done here for a one-dimensional Hubbard model with U equals 16T, just to have some parameter fixing, is up here we do exact diagonalization for a one-dimensional ring with different length up to n equal 12. And here what we do is we do also for the one-dimensional system, or these people have actually done this here, they do the same calculation, but now they use the CPT, this cluster perturbation theory. So what they do here is they use here a four-side basic unit and then continue it via the hopping, which is treated perturbatively by the CPT. And then you see already, if I now use the n equal 12 cluster, I get already features which are very close to spinon and holon features, because you have exactly this analytic type of cusp-like feature, which you know for the spinon and the holon in the single particle weight coming about. And if you would do a similar situation, just exact organization, you have lots of additional peaks, and you are still way, you are not close to the situation. So the CPT seems to work, and one can do.
Just clarification. When you say two sublattices, you mean anti-ferromagnetic sublattices? You said that when you include two sublattices in Hubbard 1.
No, the Hubbard 1 is just all these clusters are identical, okay? And one cluster has 12 sides, and I diagonalize it with open boundary conditions, and then I get a certain filling and certain states, and this I use for this Green function, the local one, and then this is continued by the CPT to give me the thermodynamic limit.
What about this business of two sublattices?
Yeah, I come to this in the calculation. So this shows you in more detail that the spectral weight in the 1D Hubbard model, this is quantum Monte Carlo, is very accurately reproduced by the CPT. So this is the CPT calculation, this is quantum Monte Carlo. And you notice we have certain features here which are fingerprints of the correct 1D physics. For example, we have a strong weight here in this so-called spinon band, and we have weight here in this holon band in the numerically exact simulation, and this you also see here, this is the spinon band, this is the holon band. Then we have incoherent weight in the background, well, this is also here, and so on in the inverse photoemission as well. And this is half-filled Hubbard, 1D Hubbard, and you can do the doping, and the spectral weight agrees similarly well. This is the quantum Monte Carlo with the doped 1D, and again you see the spinon and holon bands, spinon and holon bands. And this is reproduced. And this is not reproduced by exact ionization of, there's many more peaks, and it is just not reproduced by today's system sizes with exact ionization. So from this point of view, we got very interested in this technique. And once you are interested in this technique, it is actually very simple to sort of aim at using this for struts. It's a natural technique to discuss the strut situation. So what does this mean? Now I'm looking at an inhomogeneous system, and I have, say, a metallic stripe as one cluster, and here I have an anti-ferromagnetic stripe, an insulating stripe as another cluster. They are connected via T and T prime, if you like. You can also do it for other hoppings. And I could additionally apply a staggered external small field to induce the pi phase shift. Okay, so this is basically the idea. We calculate the anti-ferromagnetic exact ground state of such a system which has a length n in the vertical direction and let's say 3 in the horizontal direction, and this is exactly diagonalized as a half with 3-leg ladder with open boundary conditions in the TJ model. And then we can similarly exactly diagonalize the n times 1 quarter filled chain, and of course the chemical potentials have to be adjusted, so the chemical potential is adjusted in such a way that the top of the anti-ferromagnetic valence band is in agreement with the chemical potential here of the metallic situation, and this introduces a chemical potential shift delta, which is not negligible, which is of the order of 1.5 T, and this has to be generated by the actual realistic system, this shift here. Okay, so the question is, when we do this calculation, what do we now obtain? What we have obtained, or what we aimed at, is comparing various calculations where we can very neatly play with all parameters which are around in the field and compare with the ARPES data, for example, in neodymium doped LSCO or in LSCO itself. And I told you there is a very interesting two-component situation in LSCO, in the sense that in addition to this anti-ferromagnetic flat structure around pi zero, you seem to acquire all the strength in the photoemission at this additional peak above the anti-ferromagnetic situation, and then you have, which doesn't come out from this reproduction so well, lower pi over 2 peak, and it is actually weakened, which is not very visible here. This situation here distinguishes between two possibilities, which I should come back with, I forgot, of calculations we can do. One calculation we can do is we can choose a side-centered configuration, but we can also choose a bond-centered strut configuration. Why would this be interesting? Well, this would be interesting from various points of view. First of all, in connection to superconductivity, there's, for example, work by Balatsky and Lee some years ago using recoupling randomization, where they said if at all superconductivity appears in a pi phase shifted stripe static situation, then it can only appear in their calculation for bond centered strips. Now, what we are really interested in is also how, if I vary the filling, do I change from possibly this side centered in experiment to this bond centered situation. In fact, this will happen, and I'll show you how this happened, because there are important questions. For example, are the additional doped holes going more and more into this bond-centered stripe, for example, not in the anti-ferromagnetic regime, then I might want to use pictures which have been discussed by Eduardo Fradkin, keeping always the stripe in a certain filling, like a rubber band, and then discussing the dynamics and possible connections of superconductivity. Well, actually what we find, comparing to Shen's data, and I will discuss it, that the stripe, the additional holes don't want to go in here, but they want to go in here and proliferate. And then you are, so to speak, weakening the stripe picture, and I will discuss that. So these type of questions I'm interested in. Okay, so the first question is, what happens at very low doping when I compare in detail to LSCO photoemission experiments? And here I show you side-centered calculations and bond-centered calculations without T prime and with this famous T prime included. Okay, what you see is that the side-centered calculations, where I plot the shaded area here, is basically looking on top of the single particle peaks, and if they are very pronounced, I get a very pronounced black intensity, and if they are very weak, I get a white or light area. Okay.
In your calculation, I thought you got symmetry.
Yeah.
So you would have a different brilliant zone, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean,
so this is the old brilliant zone, the unbroken symmetry brilliant zone.
Yeah, you can. You get all K. I mean, basically the point is, I get all Ks. I get this is another important point. I'm doing not just one cluster, but I'm continuing this cluster to the thermodynamic limit. So the point is, I have all K points available. Yeah. And so I can directly compare with the various K points in experiment. Yeah, because I'm not just having one cluster or a super cluster which contains one stripe, but I'm continuously continuing.
Do you see this periodicity in your picture? Like
there is a slight, there are mini gaps which are hard to detect, but we have also seen mini gaps in accordance with the mini gaps found by C.F. Chen in his experimental data. Yeah, there are mini gaps in the structure. Going from, let's say, this stripe situation to this stripe situation here, there are mini gaps. Okay, but let me first come to this comparison side versus bond-centered stripes. You see immediately that in this situation I get also a jump. I have this quasi-Hubbert incoherent band from gamma to pi zero, and then there's a jump and lots of intensity in this upper part here. And then you see that this is lower at pi over 2, pi over 2, and it is sort of incoherent, it is washed out, the structure here. And this is, if you look in more detail, exactly what happens in experiment.
Sorry, but you said you saw the mechanical potential.
Yes?
The mechanical potential went from the insulating region, determined by the band of pi half, pi half.
Excuse me, what? I didn't understand your question.
The chemical potential for the insulating region, the top of the...
Yeah.
This here is determined by pi half, pi half?
For the insulator, this is at pi, if I don't have T prime included, it is essentially pi half, pi half.
So and why isn't the peak at pi half, pi half at the chemistry?
Because this is the situation where the T, AF matter, is zero. So this is the picture I start off, okay? But then I apply a TMF, a hopping, this is the inter-cluster hopping, and this introduces a rearrangement of the local chemical potentials via the hopping. And in fact, we find that holes from the metallic stripe, about 5%, roughly are hopping into the anti-ferromagnetic regime.
But how do you then, if you push down the chemical potential? I don't understand. If you push the band down, then you're confining them more and more, no?
Well, it is like a surface potential, but the holes are really going into the anti-ferromagnetic regime. This is exactly one essential point, and this gives rise to basically the bandwidth from here to here comes from vertical hoppings out of the stripe into the anti-ferromagnetic regime. So the holes are hopping into the anti-ferromagnetic regime, But it is a small number, it's about 5%.
No, I think what Maurice was asking is that if the chemical potential was as you were listed here, he would expect the rounded region of pan half being at the chemical potential. Yeah. And obviously it's being shifted down. He was asking what's the reason that would be shifted down.
It is, the reason is that there's this hopping, there is a dynamical rearrangement. This, what I have drawn, is without the hopping.
You're reducing the number of holes in the anthophyllite and going, moving those bands away from the chemical potential. Mm-hmm. This is now requires a substantial energy, you have to vote for something.
This is true. It is a substantial energy, it's of the
hole into there, so you're reducing the number of holes in your insulin and leaching cell.
Yeah. That's true. And this is a substantial energy which is borne out also by other calculations. I can show you another simulation which immediately tells you that this energy must happen in nature. Basically, you can do a simulation which we have done here doing quantum Monte Carlo, and we do this calculation where we look for the average hole count per unit cell as a function of the chemical potential. And this is in the band region where the mu is not changing. And then basically what we did here is we calculated for various chain and ladder situation the N versus mu or mu versus N relation. And you see that this change in slope first appears not for the situation where we have just one chain. This is a 32 side long chain, so it's a one-dimensional object, but it first occurs for the three-side chain. So this is a calculation for the standard Hubbard model with the standard U parameter. So according to this calculation, you would say, okay, now I have a contradiction to experiment, because the holes would first go into, because here it first lowers, or goes down, the holes would first prefer to go in three-leg ladders, but in experiment we know that the one-leg, one-side, on-side situation is stabilized in the static stripe situation. So there must be the embedding of stripes, the surface effects are very essential. And this is a large energy. This embedding energy is of the order of 1.5 T. Yeah. Okay, so let me continue with this. So this is the calculation here in the side-centered situation where we used now T prime, but had anti-ferromagnetic pi phase shifted regions. We can also include the T prime. The T prime in general does also reproduce this two peak feature close to pi zero with lots of weight in this additional upper peak here, which, as I said, looks like in a semiconductor bringing in an impurity band additional holes. And here we get a further weakening of the structure at pi over 2, pi over 2, which is also well known because T prime weakens the anti-ferromagnetic arrangement. In contrast to this side calculation for low doping, the bond-centered stripe situation does not agree with the experiment. You see, we get basically back the usual metallic cosine band and not this feature observed in two structures here in experiment. And this is a very important result in our opinion, because there are calculations, in particular by White and Scalopino, who showed that the side-centered stripes and bond-centered stripes are very close in energy. So from that point of view, they cannot be distinguished, but dynamically they can be distinguished. So we are convinced that for low doping in this LSCO experiment, one sees the side-centered stripes here, because they are clearly more in agreement than the bond-centered one. Okay, then the question, of course, would be what happens with the, or what is the physics reason for this separation. I want to understand what is the reason for this separation of energy scales. Why do I actually see these peaks? Or in other words, what are the contributions to the various single particle excitations from one-dimensional and more two-dimensional anti-ferromagnetic regimes? Excuse me? Oops. Thank you. Okay, this question of what one-dimensional physics contributes to the various peaks can be answered by doing the following calculation. We just do a calculation where we do not couple the clusters. And then this is very neat to show what the various contributions are. Because our stripes are oriented, let's say, to fix the notation in y direction. So this is, let's say, y direction, this is the stripe orientation. So if I have the y orientation, then I should not get, if I look at the contributions from the 1D physics, a dispersion in the x direction. So here I'm looking, if I go from 0,0 to pi 0, I'm changing the x component, and I should not get dispersion in, if I look at a one-dimensional physics component. And this you see exactly, so the 1D chain, which is here in the shaded drawing, is having no dispersion up to this point here. And then, of course, if you go in pi-pi direction, there is then a dispersion, and I get the upper unfilled, this is the inverse photo emission part, coming from the 1D chain. Similarly, you see that if I look at the anti-ferromagnetic three-leg ladder in this calculation, then of course I get the usual dispersion in the anti-ferromagnet between here, 0,0 and pi 0, so this disperses in x direction. And you see immediately you get in fact a very strong hybridization at pi 0. And this hybridization you can look into in more detail, and it gives rise to bonding and anti-bonding states, to a splitting, and one state is shifted up, this is this part, and one state is shifted down, this is this part. So this is a hybridization effect between these two band features. The chemical potential is in this thing here. The chemical, but here in the upper picture, I'm in this situation, let's say, where I have fixed the uppermost peak of the valence band of the insulator to the chemical potential of the metal. States above the chemical potential appear only in the 1D chain. These are these unfilled states here from the metal. Exactly.
There's a large gap, isn't there?
Yeah, there is.
Of order half dB almost.
Yeah, but I'm jumping in the case here.
So, in fact, there is no gap?
This is a metallic, this 1D band is a metallic band. So, somewhere there is a crossing band.
But the chemical potential is exactly at zero, right?
Yeah, sure.
And there are nothing at zero in this picture?
No, he was just saying he has a discrete k points.
I have discrete k points, and at some k points I'm jumping. Okay, so if I then turn on the intercluster hopping, then you see you get indeed what we discussed, namely you get two peaks at pi 0, and they are the result from a hybridization effect between the 1D band and the anti-ferromagnetic band, and the final result is shown here. So we believe that this is really some evidence, clear evidence, that the stripes are there in this material. Also, you can ask questions, okay, how does this then compare with Su Shang Tsang. My friend is in my brain. My friend is in my brain. No, I was speaking about CX. So how does this compare with the CX data, which are plotted here? So what CX told you is you can do two type of experiments. One is you integrate basically over all omega, this gives the momentum distribution, or you just do the low energy integration. And then for low energies, you pick up these pi over zero strong contributions. These are these shaded contributions. And here you see the quasar 1D rods. Well, this is not the best picture reproduction of our data, but you clearly see in the side-centered quasar 1D rods. And in particular, at low energy excitations, you see the pi zero contributions very much like in the experiment. On the other hand, again, if for this low doping situation we do a bond-centered calculation, you see already that you get a quasar two-dimensional structure coming up in contrast to the experiment. Now, this is very interesting, on the other hand, for higher dopings, because now I'm asking the question, what happens at higher dopings? So at higher dopings, if I look at the most recent Stanford experiments, they seem to tell me that if I look again at this neodymium LSTO system, and I go from this situation, which I've just discussed, integrating low energy weight around the Fermi surface, having these pi zero dips here, if I go to 15% doping in the experiment, I seem to acquire a second additional structure. So in addition to the 1D spectral confinement here, we seem to acquire a 2D electron-like Fermi surface, which is this diamond-shaped object here. And this also happens in LSTO itself. This is this here, which is down here. You get this two-component structure. So now I'm asking the question, and technically I can do this with this cluster perturbation theory, where do actually the holes go if I go more and more doping? Okay, and we have done various calculations to clarify. So the first thing I could do is I could put the additional holes. I could put the additional holes in the already doped two-leg ladder. So you could say, okay, I have these two-leg ladders, and now I want to see are they really stable as a stripe, and I put more and more holes into the stripes. This would confirm more the picture that the stripes are really living as a, so to speak, stable entity, but they acquire more and more holes. Okay? When we do this calculation, we get something which has no resemblance really of the experiments. The experiments, this is 19% doping here in our calculation, and the experiments, as I said, have this situation where you still see clearly these 1D segments and on top this diamond shaped type of thing. And in this calculation, where we put the holes in the already doped two-leg ladder, we see just peaks coming up at pi over 2, pi over 2, but we don't really see the overall experimental feature.
This, can I just make sure that's a two-leg TJ, and you build it beyond a rho L?
Exactly, yes.
What White and I found when we did the long ladder was it would actually phase separate in your region. It was 0.5 and 1.
This is a very...
like that, or at least didn't seem to like that filling.
Yeah, this is a, this is...
Yours is short enough,
I think. It's short enough and stabilized is 1-2 this, but we rule this out also on top of this discussion here.
What restores the four-fold symmetry? You get those one-piece...
It is actually not restored. This is drawn so to correspond to their data. So we get really a rod. So make it, to make it clear, if we have the stripes in y direction,
yeah,
our Fermi surface goes only in x direction. And we always plot x and y, so we symmetrize it to compare with their data.
Okay.
Asymmetrize as well.
No.
We do this.
In this particular case, we symmetrize and all the new data, which I showed yesterday, which I can pull that one immediately.
How can you do that if you mean you polarize photons?
Yeah.
Photons are polarized?
Yeah.
So how can you do that with photons?
Okay, come. Just to show, there is a slight difference for the overall, it's very similar. The release sort of polarized along 45 degrees.
Oh,
yeah. So it can take into the whole situation.
You wanted to go to... Okay, we can come back to this.
That's all I want to say.
So what I now do is I want to see where the holes really go. So I could also say, okay, sorry. I put the extra holes in the previously undoped antiferromagnetic regime. Now I'm really letting the holes proliferate and the stripes get more and more, if you like, two-dimensional objects. Okay, then, not surprisingly, the overall N of K is very rounded, but what's more, much more interesting is, what does the low energy weight look like? And the low energy weight we have plotted here. And you see now we have really the features of CHN's data. We have at pi zero these still quasi one-dimensional objects, but we now fill in a second object, which is the electron-like thermosurface rounded. And there are lots of details. We could compare this in detail with the data, and I have no time and don't want to bother you with this. But this, in our opinion, tells us is a technique which tells us where do the holes really go. So we can tell, at least for static stripe situations, where the holes want to go if we dope further and forth.
This was a bond center calculation?
Excuse me?
This last one was a bond center?
This is a bond center calculation, but where we don't put in the additional holes in the bonds, but into the antiferromagnetic regime. So our conclusion is no, the stripes are no longer a sort of valid object to discuss. They are disrupted, and they don't move as an entity like a rubber band, and they are spread out.
Can I make a comment? I want to bring your attention to the dispersion from 0,0 to pi, the lower part. I'm sorry, 0,0 to pi.
This you mean probably, yeah.
And you now begin to see a very strong, you see it, if you will look casually, it will be a dispersion going up like this, and a very strong bend of this. And this effect is bigger if you look in the data as you go under the door. Give you the energy scale is not right, but it's very interesting because those effects of the kink, like dispersion, in the LSCO, higher energy and very strong.
Yes, this kink was there in the underdope that is vanishing in the overdope situation. So there are details which really agree with the experiment. Okay, so let me not bother you further. So I hope I didn't do such a bad job in the sense of timing. And so I come to my conclusion. I hope I have convinced you that this simple technique, it's simple and neat, and it wasn't our idea. The only idea we had was very quickly to adapt it to a situation which we think is optimal for this technique. It gives a quantitative description, in fact, of ARPES, and we consider this as further evidence for stripes, at least in certain high-TC materials, which I have discussed, LSCO and neodymium LSCO. And for low doping, we have the side center stripes to being favored. And for higher doping, we go more and more bond-centered in an intermediate regime, and then the holes proliferate out of the bonds, and the stripe picture at about 19% becomes invalid. We are presently, and this is work I'm actually doing here, to use the same technique to calculate two-particle correlation functions. This can be formulated along the perturbation theory, and we want to investigate what superconducting correlation functions are doing. Thank you for your attention.
Compared your results with the ones that Stephen Light and Doug got for ladders with stripes, for instance, the distribution of holes along the ladders and things like that?
Yeah, I would like to come back to this discussion, if you allow me, in more detail at some other opportunity, because actually we have done another work where we studied in detail the effect of Kuno long-range effects on the, if you like, Weitz-Calopino results because of this controversy, let's say, between Emery Kibbleson, who emphasized that the Kuno interaction is the driving force, and Wild and Scalapino said, no, I get this already in a short-range correlation picture. The cooler energy is a very sizable energy. It has to be treated very carefully because there is background screening. This has to be involved, and I would like to discuss this in more detail if we find some other time or some discussion meeting in the future. I will discuss it, but let me just tell you quickly what happens there is we do find in the underdog regime that the, let's say, DMRG, white Scalapino stripes, are very substantially delocalized, but we still do find the stripes. But the charge, because of the Cooler interaction, tends to be more delocalized. If we come close to 1 over 8, we find something interesting in our opinion. The order of periodicity is changed due to the Cooler, and then you have very strong charge fluctuations between different periodicities, and this induces a strong effect on the superconducting pairing susceptibility.
But for short range interactions, then quantitatively, you don't get the same results. That's what you're telling me.
Now, in the for short-range interaction, when we do the DMRG, meaning the TJ model really carefully with the corresponding boundary condition, we do get exactly what White and Scalapino.
No, but I'm asking a different thing. If you apply your technique.
This technique is a different technique. This technique is what Morris asked, basically fixing the shift delta by hand. And then by adjusting the corresponding peaks, which of course makes from a physics point of view makes sense. But the question then is, what is this shift delta, which is of order 1.5 T? Now the other calculation I would like to report some other time is aiming at directly calculating the shift. And in agreement with what I said here, we find that in fact it is of the order of 1.5 times T. And this is then contesting some of the results or supporting, but also sometimes contesting results of White and Scalapino. So but this uses the Cooler interaction in addition.
I see, no, but there is a discrepancy. That's what I want to understand. Is there a discrepancy or not if you apply this technique to the same problem with the same
No, systems? You can say for the systems we have studied, which are typically shorter than the DMRG, we have fixed, if you want, the stripe situation by hand. In the CPT as our starting point. Yeah? So we put the stripes in the cluster calculation by adjusting the corresponding chemical potential. This is a different calculation. That's why initially I wanted to do the stability first and then tell you, okay, the stripes survive, which actually we find, because many people have said the stripes are totally wiped out if I put in the Cooler interaction. This is not so. We find that the stripes survive, but very large charge fluctuations are induced, which have consequences for superconductivity. And
do I understand it right? This is more of a simulation as to what you would get in full remission
if you had exactly. Yeah. That's
and
the
it's
point.
Not a self-consistent.
No.
Exactly. You have this delta in there.
Exactly.
I think it's beautiful in that way.
Yeah.
Because a negative T prime, for example, in White Scalapino, the stripes disappear.
Right.
Or T prime negative. And with yours they don't, because you simply fix them.
Right.
Yeah. Could you give us a feeling in your final result, which you compare to the larger doping
photo machine,
what's your final total distribution?
The whole distribution, as I said, is that about 5 to 10% of the holes hop finally and leave the metallic regime, and this was the situation where I discussed, let me make it clear, still the single side situation at about 12% doping. There I know the numbers. And if I look at the interferromagnetic regime, there are about 5% of holes which have left here.
Yeah, but sir, do we have to place any value on that? Because that's determined by delta.
Yeah, that's determined
by delta. Your delta is a parameter. Yeah, so there's no reason to...
Yeah, but I want to emphasize this delta is determined by numerics in the sense that one, of course, would like for the non-interacting where I have no warping situation, I would like to adjust the top of the valence band in both the metallic and the insulating situation.
Yeah,
I just want to understand in the case where you get the coexistence of stripe like feature at low energy at time zero and also the 2D like how inhomogeneous the density is, to what extent finally after you have done the cluster federation theory, which is still think of the system as having stripe.
Well, here's basically the answer. The answer was that
real space, right?
Yeah, it's in real space. So what I do is I have, it's written here. I have four holes in the 2 8 is the length of my system. 2 times 8 2-leg ladder, and two holes in the 2 times 8 2-leg ladder. That's the situation.
Do you have any pictures that aren't symmetrized?
I had some picture which I can dig out on the Fermi surface, which are not symmetrized. If I find it quickly, I think here. Here. But this is an old first calculation, but then it looks like this. So this is our result, and this is the experimental result.
Can I ask about the Woodfordness point? It's Woodford Shakespeare, that's in minus 504 to plus 504.
Yes.
So that's the Woodford pi over 2.
Yeah, so they get minus pi over 4 to plus pi over 4.
So that is occupying the contained limit of pi squared now?
Don't ask me to do this in detail, but we did the counting. This is fulfilling Lattice's theorem.
Very naive counting will work it out. If there's pi over 4 this way and this way, if you take the double counting in the middle and
out. You can't double count because
yeah, that's fine. And if you will work it out, it's about 12%.
Yeah.
What is 12%?
The doping.
Okay.
With holes. Well, we did that. I mean, this is.
Think about it. You have occupied here a quarter of the zone or something.
Yeah, we can talk about it. But this is fulfilling the sum on the firm surface.
Which is half filled. In the
naive
country, you have the part, straight part, you say it's half filled, right? Then you also have other portion of the state, which is half filled.
Yeah,
so you need to take that.
Then I would have 1/8 of an electron, as I can describe, and 1/8 of an electron should fill 1/16 of the zone.
What do you do when you
width of your collapse is a quarter of the zone?
Yes. Let's say if the strike region will be 4/4.
So for this situation, this is correct.
4/4, then the occupied region must be narrower, no?
Occupied region is a quarter, that's why. A quarter, the other is half filled. So the other is half. It's a quarter.
Yeah.
with a weighted 3/1, and it worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah, naively it works out.
Okay,
we can sit down. So this is our unit cell, more or less, right?
It's because the anti-ferromagnetic ladders are half filled and the stripes are quarter filled.
Yeah.
If you make an average.
I'm aware of that, but I still go on quarter filled on 1/4 of the unit cell.
Yeah.
Gives me 1/16 or something filled. Right? And that somehow your stripes seem to occupy a quarter of the unit cell, but
that's only the one-dimensional V1 zone. This doesn't satisfy the Lattice theorem. That's what you're saying, right? This cross does not satisfy the Lattice theorem.
Locally, you
won't. But I don't even understand how you get that. If it's only coming from
the stripe.
So a single chain, which is
a quarter filled. It's a quarter filled chain.
That's good.
NH equals 0.5.
So
it's
a quarter
filled.
Should have a.
Yeah, it has a hole per every second side. So this is a hole, this is a hole here.
Quarter filled chain, which would go from minus pi over 8 to plus pi over 8.
part of the area. One quarter of the V1 zone.
What quarter of the V1 zone?
So the V1 zone.
Minus 4 to pi.
Minus pi over 8 to plus pi.
No, pi over 4 to pi. Pi over 4 to pi over 4. Because
the area should be 1 quarter.
And then the V1 zone is from minus pi to pi.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. No. This is not superconduct. It has nothing to do with superconduct. It's a normal mistake. Okay?
Hi. I don't know if we were ever introduced. I'm a customer.
Okay, Rana Hanke.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, actually, we did, I liked a lot what both you guys did. But I'd like to talk about some work we did some time ago on the problem of stability, which somewhat similar to what you guys, I think it's very similar to what you guys have.
You mean with the Coulomb interaction?
No, without, actually.
Okay.
That's because, essentially, it was exactly on this point of where you need really good interaction to stabilize this dry analysis.
And what I asked this question the other day,
a calculation, which is assuming that starting the system with a anti-phase domain Eisenhower model. And then we asked the following question, of course, if you have an Eisenhower zone.
So if you just have one eighth of an electron in this unit, in this zone.
No, I was curious. I was going to ask a question because I hadn't seen some of the data.
So you have all these growing components. So you take J of
appreciation,
right?
And then what we ask the following question. Now, if you start to grow these with the hole, then you establish a translation invariance along the domain wall. And the question was if the kinetic energy was enough to stabilize this situation.
Morris, you want to work out?
And so we did a calculation in the principal pattern.
Yeah.
So we not only consider the motion of the hole in this direction, but also the strings that it generates away from the anti-phase domain wall. And what we find is exactly what you said, that the hole actually explores a quite sizable region around the anti-phase domain wall.
Yes.
And actually to stabilize the situation, you need this kinetic energy. So in fact,
you need this motion
to stabilize the situation. We compared results with White and Scalabrino, and it works very, very well. Mm-hmm. Even for the TJ model, these retraceable path approximations.
I have probably seen this because I read many papers of you also, so, but maybe you can give me a copy. I read it in addition.
I may even have it here,
but I'm not sure. Because I have to write up a paper on this Coulomb part. Okay.
So this is the, essentially that's the idea. So you have the Eisenhower model, and then the idea is that you start with the Peregrine's function, and you go Brinkman-Rice type population. So you start with the situation and looking at the strings away from the anti-phase domain wall. And the problem reduced to a continual fraction problem.
Yeah.
And what we find is like this, that the hole energy, you have a kind of bend. The bend is strongly normalized by this string excitation.
Yes.
But still, if you calculate the total energy, just taking the account the Fermi repulsion, you find that the total energy is below the polar type energy that you would have in a homogeneous background when the filling of the stripe becomes smaller than 25%. And this part is exactly what Doug and Steve do get. And here is the plotting of the whole density as a function of the position transverse to this anti-Fermi model. And this is our results, and this is White and Scalapino. So it works very, very well. So at least last week, even Stephen White was here. We are writing a paper together on this. And it turns out we even compared the total energy.
But I mean, what really I have to tell you is that unfortunately the White Scalapino energy picture is very dramatically changed when you put in Coulomb.
I know, but this was the question we want to answer here. It was not a very ambition.
Yeah, I understand.
It was just a question of
what happens for a short range 2J
like
model.
Like if you can stabilize.
Yeah, I understand.
It's right.
So I have to talk.
And in fact, we found that.
I will read this. It's very interesting because the danger of Scalapino White, in our opinion, one danger is the following. Sure, but let's say I believe that that one problem one simply has, which is, oh my gosh. Is basically this plot, you know, where they plot the whole energy for the T prime, for the situation where I just have two holes which bind in a pair, the unbound one hole, which of course has higher energy, and then the stripe situation.
Right.
And then you see that you get immediately into trouble once you put on T prime, and I'm not even, let's say, criticizing this because I believe the calculation, but the danger is these are very small energy differences.
But actually, and so, you know, in the real system, in fact, I think that the two situations coexist. So probably in the real system, because there's more, you probably have stripe and bump states of holes bouncing around.
Yeah, could be.
Because, as I say, it's almost degenerate.
Yeah.
So it could be that, in fact, but perhaps that's the key for stability. I don't know.
Yeah.
That these stripes are not really isolated. But you can hear.
But you see, that's why I emphasize this somewhat. I'm sort of also saying from our results, at least on these quasi-static stripes, it looks as if it is very dangerous for, let's say, optimal filling to just say, okay, I have stripes which meander, and but they don't change their filling, so to speak. But that's not what really happens here. It's not this coherent type of light picture, but it's the incoherent single particle hops, which give rise to this photo emission spectrum.
Right. Oh, I think this is a very important comment, because most of the ideas of people in regards to stripes do not consider any kind of particle exchange between the stripes.
Right.
But one of the things that we see here is that because of this string confinement, it seems to be easy, at least when the distance between the stripes is large, that it's easier to actually, for the stripe to exchange pairs of holes, than to exchange single particles, single holes.